Blog Talk Radio.
En la vida hay amores y casi ganadores, pero en la vida mía no hay nadie como ella. Oh, nadie como ella. Mi primavera y mi verano, mi futuro y mi pasado. Si hay solo luna llena, siempre existe ella. Oh, y nadie más que ella. Ella, su piel sabor canela, cabello de sirena y voz manantial. Ella, la más linda, la más bella, la que acaba con mis penas, nadie la igualará. En la vida hay promesas, retos y sorpresas, pero el porvenir es claro cuando estoy con ella. Sabor canela, cabello de sirena y voz manantial. Ella, la más linda, la más bella, la que acaba con mis penas, nadie la igualará. Ella, con sus ojos de estrella, que recoge por mis venas sobredosis de amor. Ella, la más linda, la más bella, la que acaba con mis penas, desvanece el dolor.
Everybody to John Talk Radio tonight. This is April the 30th, Saturday night. Our special guest tonight is Dave Sasser. Dave, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, John. I appreciate you having me.
Oh, that's a great song. That had me dancing around here in the Studio One. That was,
Thank you.
Yeah, that's a great song. It's just such a positive song. It's just got such a good energy to it.
That's the idea.
It works. It's really good. Well, what we want to do tonight when we talk to Dave, and we want to talk about Dave's musical career and what's going on, what's happening now, what's talk about the past and the future and what's going on, and also to play some music throughout the show so people can understand, you know, what your music's about and what's going on. And so when they listen to the podcast, Dave, they could get the whole picture of what Dave Sasser's all about and what the music is. And so we just... I welcome you to the show, and I think we'll have a really good time tonight. So,
that sounds great to me.
Yeah. So why don't we start off, Dave, with what's new and exciting? What's going on?
Well, the song that you just heard is off the last album that I released. And then since then, which is called Cuentos a la Portada del Sol, Capítulo Uno, and which means stories from the port of the door of the sun, Chapter One. And I call it Chapter One because I have several other or numerous other songs that are part of the general thematic approach that I'm currently mixing and getting ready to release as chapter two.
And
the reason it's called Cuentos de la Puerta del Sol is Puerta del Sol is a relatively new term, but it's referring to the west coast of Puerto Rico where I grew up. And so the songs were all about different towns or different people that I knew on the west coast. And when you fly into the west coast, when you get to the airport, it says, "Welcome to the Puerta del Sol." So what I'm doing now, the new stuff is mixing, mastering my chapter two of that sequence of albums.
Oh, cool. So are you doing the production yourself how's that working out? Are you going to?
Yeah. Well, actually for this batch of songs, it's interesting. I actually, wrote the songs. Well, I'll step back a little bit. I went to high school in Puerto Rico, which is where I grew up, and I went back for high school reunion, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago, and happened to reconnect with a bunch of friends of mine from high school who coincidentally were all musicians and all out performing in their band. So we all got together for a reunion jam.
Oh,
it was
cool.
So much fun. Yeah, it was so much fun that I sat down and wrote a bunch of songs with that in mind, and that's why I got the theme of the west side of the island. And the song that you just played, Ella, I actually co-wrote with my classmates. In fact, Kenny, Ricky, Steven, Orlando, and Mari, we all sat down and wrote that song together. And the first round of those recordings, we all produced together in Cabo Rojo, in a small town in the south of Puerto Rico. And then I brought those recordings back to the States and kind of redid them here in New York, rethought them a little bit, and then re-recorded them and reproduced them myself with some with my usual New York band here.
Okay.
So it's self-produced, but it's been a sequence of production starting, I guess, with the writing several years ago and then the producing, et cetera, et cetera. So there are several versions of the songs floating around, but the ones that you've got are the official release.
Well, that's great. And that's interesting, you know, going back to your high school classmates, it sounds like a very positive thing that happened. I mean, it can be, for just speaking me, Dave, sometimes that's not always a positive thing. But
yeah.
It sounds really, really cool that you connected with your buddies that were, you know, into music, and you were able to not even just talk about music, but actually make some, which is really, really cool.
Right. And I thought where you're going was a high school jam is not always a positive thing, also on a musical level, which is true. But luckily, we all have, I guess we all grew up, it's funny because we all grew up in Puerto Rico, but we grew up listening to, you know, when you're in Puerto Rico, you obviously listen to salsa and merengue and all that stuff. But we were also real, what they called at the time, croqueros, which are people who listen to rock. Like I was huge into Beatles and Led Zeppelin and Queen, and Ricky was into Kiss, and Orlando was into Yes, and we all had different bands that we were into. So we grew up with the same aesthetic, the mixture of the Caribbean vibe, which, you know, is everywhere, and the rock and roll approach to songwriting and the production. So it really fit surprisingly well, considering I hadn't seen these guys in, you know, I don't know how many years. We just jumped right in, and it was so much fun. You know, going to reunion can be a mixed blessing, as you pointed out, but this was like one of the peaks of my life. It was amazing. It was so much fun. So,
that's
the music sounded really good. So.
Yeah, that's really good. That's great. How about, like, your buddies, what instruments did they play? I mean, did you guys play before? You know, did you know each other musically, like playing bands before, or how
well,
did that?
It's kind of a funny story. In high school, Orlando was like the rock star of the high school. And he may be listening to the show, which would be pretty funny. He actually went out and started a band called Nirvana before the U.S. Nirvana. This was a long time ago. And he became pretty famous in Puerto Rico. We found some old YouTube clips of him on TV and, you know, with kind of like, you know, the Puerto Rican version of American Bandstand in the 80s. It was pretty funny. But then the other guys, Ricky and his brothers, they all started playing in high school. And I really was dabbling in high school, not that serious. It wasn't until later that I got more serious. But they kept playing. So when I went back, they didn't know that I'd really played much, and I knew that they used to play, but I had no idea how accomplished they were,
right,
other than Orlando, you know. And so we all kind of sat in the room and started jamming. We realized, wow, not only is this fun, but we're actually good enough to pull it off. So we all picked our instruments. You know, Ricky was playing keys, Steven playing bass, Kenny playing drums. The three of them are brothers, and they play in a band together there, so they were very tight. Orlando's an amazing lead guitarist, and Mari played or sang background. And then I play rhythm and lead and sing. And it all came together very well. So we had a full band, and it was very organic. It sounded great. So.
Yeah, that's really cool. And you were talking about going back and listening to Orlando's music and watching it on YouTube or,
yeah.
you know, with the 80s. I think that is so amazing because it doesn't seem, Dave, like that long ago. But when I go
Right.
back and look at some of the stuff that was going on in the 80s with, like, you know, style, hairstyles and clothing.
I was just going to say, yeah, the mullets always throw me for a loop. And Orlando had a prime mullet. It was pretty funny.
Yeah, it is. And you look back at it, you think it was, you know, I've interviewed bands that in today's world, you know, 2011, that they kind of go back to that 80s sound. And it's kind of interesting to me how some younger musicians now are going back and, you know, and it's interesting because, you know, we were there and it was okay at that time, but, you know, people are moving forward musically. So how do you look, Dave, like for your musical influences, like what were some of your musical influences when you were starting out?
Well, I grew up listening. My older brother had a record collection. He actually went to college in the States when I was younger and brought a bunch of albums back. So I grew up listening from the Beatles and the Stones and the Who, the whole British Invasion and Led Zeppelin, a little bit of Bob Dylan. But then I also got a big dose of a lot of reggae, a lot of Bob Marley, Peter Tosh, a lot of punk, actually. The Clash is one of my favorite bands for a long time. In fact, London Calling is probably one of my all-time favorite albums, although most of my music isn't that hard, but I love that stuff. Then I also, when we were kids, there were huge hits from bands like El Gran Combo de Puerto Rico, which is one of the top salsa bands, Willie Colon and Rubén Blades. So a lot of people like that who are contemporary salsa songwriters, performers. So a lot of that seeped into. So it's kind of a combination of all of the above. There are probably a lot of people I'm not thinking of, but I'm very easily influenced by whoever I'm listening to at the moment. So.
Well, that's really interesting to me because, you know, one thing in this show I like to do when I talk to songwriters is, you know, try to find out, you know, what's the motivation and what, you know, everybody writes differently. And a lot of times, like, you can really get into, you know, some of the influences. But this is really cool because it sounds like you have such a diverse list of influences. So when you, like, sit, I don't know how, you know, we'll talk about your writing style, but I mean, how do you think that works when you're going to say, well, you know, I feel influenced to write a song. Do you think that, you know, some of the things that you listened to in the past or influence you, or do you, I've talked to songwriters, Dave, that say, well, you know, I'm writing forward. I don't know if you've heard that before, but it's like, I try not to think of the past or what's going on and move forward with my songwriting skills. Or my ideas. I don't know if that makes sense, but
yeah, no, that makes sense. But I have to say, I'm not sure if eclectic is the right word, or maybe just all over the place in terms of what I listen to, in terms of and therefore in terms of what I write. If I'm in a, you know, if I've been steeped in Marley for the last month, but I've gone back and rediscovered his stuff, I'll end up writing two or three songs that are, you know, give me the same feeling as the Bob Marley approach, or,
right.
you know, I just rediscover the Beatles every couple of years and I'll go, wow, that's some really cool harmonies and real cool chord changes, especially. And I'll go back and, you know, write a batch of songs specifically thinking of, you know, interesting chord changes, maybe even the Beatles might've used.
Right.
Whereas with the Marley, it was more about the groove.
Right.
So it really is the mood I'm in. And I don't necessarily say that I write forward. A lot of times I dip back into stuff I've done before. Sometimes, like that song, Ella, I had the riff in my head, the chorus, the Ella, and I didn't know anything else. It was bugging me. I knew it could be a great, fun little pop tune, so I took it to these guys, and I said, guys, I've got the melody and I've got the chords. I just don't know what the words should be, so let's all sit down. And we sat around a table, poured some rum and cokes, and spent 3 hours just banging out lyrics, and so we wrote it as a group, and it ended up sounding great. So I don't think there is any particular method. It's just kind of whatever is turning me on at that moment, you know? And so therefore sometimes the songs are all over the place in terms of style, but that's, I really do it for my own, pleasure, and that's what turns me on. So,
and the point when you brought out with, you know, with bringing the song to your friends and getting the input. And I think that's really cool how you could do that, because I've known some people, and I actually, I'm not going to say anyone by name, but just recently I've interviewed a couple of folks that are very headstrong, and this is the way we want it, and this is the way I've written it, and this is the way I hear it in my head, and this is the way it's got to be. And I think that's fine. I mean, you know, that's okay. But when I'm listening to what you're saying is, you know, you brought this, which was, you know, songs are very personal, and to songwriters, and saying, hey, guys, you know, help me out with this, which I think is really cool how you can do that and accept their ideas.
Yeah.
Yeah, because sometimes have you ever in your musical career, Dave, seen that when you've done that, like maybe – their suggestions or the way they want the song to go isn't exactly the way you've seen it?
Yeah. I'd say two things. First of all, some songs I have completed 100% and I bring it to the band and I say, this is what I hear. However, the rule that I try to use is anybody's allowed to come up with any suggestions and we'll try it. And then, but at the end of the day, somebody has to decide yes or no. So if it's my band and I'm recording it, then I'll decide yes or no. But I try to let everybody air whatever ideas they have. I've been in so many bands where somebody will say, well, let's put in an A major, and somebody else will argue, oh, an A major is a stupid chord. You know, you don't really know it unless you sit down and hear it in the context of the song. And so I do, and I run through. But at the end of the day, I will decide what stays in and what isn't. If it's my song, of course, if it's somebody else's song, I'll contribute and let them, you know, it's their baby. But, yeah, oftentimes people come up with ideas and, you know, you have to be somewhat diplomatic and it doesn't really work. And they might think it's the best thing since sliced bread, and I'm, you know, and it doesn't matter whether I'm right or wrong, it just doesn't work for me. And this is my song. If it doesn't work for me, and it's my song, that's not really gonna. I'm never gonna be able to sell anybody else on it if it doesn't work for me.
Oh, exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point too, because you know, like I've also talked to folks that are, you know, they when they write songs and they have the concept of the song, what they want the you know, basically the song to be. And then when they also, Dave, can get into the studio, and a producer can also sometimes take a song different directions than when you want to go. And that can also be good and it can be bad, I would imagine.
Well, that's a good point. It depends on the producer.
Yep.
It depends on a lot of things. And whenever there's a collaboration like that, you got to have a lot of trust in the person you're collaborating with and make sure that, you know, they don't take it in a direction that after it's done, you look back on it and think, you know, that really didn't work. And the funny thing is, as a listener, you have no idea, and I have no idea how many albums that I love or loathe ended up that way because, you know, the producer said, oh, you need more cowbell, you know, and it ended up in there. You know, who knows? We don't really know when to the sausage making, as they say, but, but yeah, it's always a risk. But if you pick the right people and if you approach it from the right way, and if you can step back and objectively, as best as possible, objectively look at the results, then hopefully there's enough checks and balances to where what comes out, you know, will be a good, even if it's not what you were thinking originally, will be valid on its own in its own way. Hopefully.
Right. Yeah, I understand that part too, because it's sometimes you have to take a risk, and you think, possibly they can take it a different area than I can or a different place than I can. And it might sound really good.
Yeah. Yeah, it may be good, maybe bad, but afterwards we can step back and listen to it and decide, at least, you know, you gave it a shot.
Right. Yeah. And I also think when you're working on a song, this is a question I like to ask all the songwriters. It's like, was there ever, and there might be more than one, but when you're writing a song, Dave, and you're putting the song together and you think, oh my gosh, that's pretty good. It's like this, you know, light comes on, you think, wow, or a song that really is special to you or means something to you. Did you have a song like that, Dave?
I'll be honest with you. Almost every song I write, as soon as I'm done writing it, I'm absolutely convinced it's the best song I've ever written in my life, and everybody in the world should hear it. After a week or two, that wears off. But I've literally, like when I worked out a particular course or something, jumped up and down and hollered because I was so happy that I nailed it.
Yeah.
Afterwards, I can put it in context. You know, not every song, A, is the best one I've ever written, or B, even needs to be heard by other people. But it sure feels that way when I finished, you know. And that's one of the reasons I do it. It just feels so good to, you know, it's like tickling my brain is what I call it. I tickle my brain or massage my brain, whatever you call it, when writing a song when it comes out like that. And it feels great. And if other people love it or like it or at least, you know, put up with it, then that's great.
Yeah.
But the fun part is that I really enjoy doing it. And it's a huge sense of accomplishment when I'm finished with a song, even if afterwards I decide the song sucks and, you know, nobody wants to hear it. But it is a real sense of accomplishment. And hopefully, you know, each song gets a little bit better, or I guess on the average they get better. Any given song may not be, but, you know, one hopes that you're getting better as you do it. So.
Well, do you remember the first song you played, Dave, in front of people? Do you remember that?
Yes, as a matter of fact. That's funny. Nobody's ever asked me that. Well, the first song I played in front of any sort of real audience. I mean, I played my guitar when I was learning it in front of a lot of people who were, you know, sitting around at a party but not paying attention to me. The first one I ever did was either Willie and the Poor Boys by Creedence Clearwater or Wonderful Tonight by Eric Clapton. And I say one or the other because my buddy and I got together and we did both of those songs at like a talent show.
Okay.
I was like 18.
Yep.
And I don't remember which one we did first, which we did second. But I sang Willie and the Poor Boys, and he sang Wonderful Tonight. And we both played guitar and stuff. And so it was one of those two. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And that's one of the things also when I talk to folks, Dave, that are musicians, how that, you know, maybe that first time when people, you could, when the audience connects, that's a magical thing.
Well, I tell you, I was shocked spitless that they didn't just walk out. They didn't laugh and leave. Like, oh, my God, we're actually performing and they're not walking away. You know, it was so thrilled. It was such a high. It was great.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, they're not throwing things at me. This is pretty cool.
Yeah, exactly. No beer thrown at me. You know, nobody walked out. It was like in a big dorm and everybody was still digging it. So I'm like, cool, this is fun. So,
No one was injured. Yeah, that's pretty
exactly.
good. And I was exactly. Talking to someone not too long ago about the first band I was in, and it was, you know, many, many years ago. And I can remember we were playing. What happened back in those days were a band would play, and then when they take a break, the starting out bands could play their breaks. And you could, you know, when they're out, you know, walking around, you could play them. And a couple of my buddies got together, Dave, and thought, well, we'd get a band together. We didn't have a name or anything. We really didn't know any songs, but maybe a couple of chords. And I can remember right before the gig, they said, what's the name of your band? And one of the guys said, Farmer John and the Three Little Pigs. And I thought, oh, my God. This is a great way to start out your career. But
absolutely.
I can remember that day, and I can remember us playing it. I can remember all of us looking down. None of us were looking at the crowd at all. We were
right.
All staring right at the ground like, oh, my gosh. How long? We didn't want to see if there's actually anybody there or not. But that's always kind of cool. And, I like to talk to folks because, you know, when you start off, that's generally there's a connection there. And the thing with music that is so amazing to me and with your music and what we want to talk about tonight with the rest of the interview is that how, you know, you can make this incredible communication to people through music that possibly, in my opinion, you couldn't make any other way.
Mm-hmm.
And where you might, you know, you have a message or some way, you know, somebody can get some really positive things from songs that, you know, they may not be able to get from people just like lecturing them or talking to them or whatever. So I think that, you know, through this show that I've been doing the last two or three years, it's so cool to talk to people that, you know, have made music their life and have been able to just, you know, get involved with all these different things that are going on and make music that actually in a lot of ways can change people's lives. And with your music, Dave, I think it's so upbeat and positive that it just really, to me, it's a real a needed thing in this day and age to have music like that.
Thank you. I can't say that it's a specific goal of mine when I'm writing. However, people tell me that all the time, and I think it's partially just because that's my personality. Everybody's personality comes through. And people say that, you know, they feel happy when they hear the song. So that's huge. I'm thrilled with that. So even if some of the songs are somewhat sad lyrically, they still end up coming out feeling happy, so that's fine too.
Well,
it happens.
Yeah, that's interesting too. But, you know, it's like I was talking today, I was at a place with promoting the radio show today, and I was talking to some folks, and they were asking me about the different kind of genres of music that I've had, and I've actually don't think there's too many that I haven't had, but I was talking about this one. I guess they call like a black metal, death metal, core metal type band, where they would do a lot of growling. They call it, I don't know, it's like the screaming growling, the guttural. I don't know if you've heard that.
No, I haven't, but I can imagine what it is in death metal, especially. Yeah.
And what's amazing about that is, I would listen to that and think, oh my God, that's pretty, intense. And how that music, it has been portrayed in different ways, and people will get inspiration from it, but connect to it in different ways. And that's what I think is so incredibly awesome about music. And that's why I do this show, just to, I've interviewed bands from all over the world and from different countries. And I just, it's that one common bond that is, so really cool. Well, what I think we'll do, Dave, is take a music break and we'll play a song, and we will continue. And if you would like to, talk to Dave. You can call in 646-595-2483 is a call-in number. We have a chat going. And our guest tonight is Dave Sasser. And if you would like to go on his website, it is at davesasser.com. And I know you can pick up your music also, Dave, on iTunes and Amazon.
And also on Facebook. If you go to Dave Sasser on Facebook, or Dave Sasser and the Mojo Conga Jam is my local band here. You can pick all that up on Facebook, too. Yep.
Yeah, that's cool. And when we come back, we'll talk about the band and what's going on. And people can check you out live. And so let's play one of the songs you sent me. I think it's Dimetu. Does that sound right? Did I say that?
Dimetu, which means you tell me.
And would you like to talk about this song a little bit before we play it, Dave?
Sure. This song was actually, I had started writing it in English, actually, way back when, and that idea of a baby you tell me kept going around in my head as like a little lick after the verse. And when I decided to write these Spanish songs, that's the only part that I had. I'm like, well, what is this going to be about? And then Pero Dime Tú sounds rhythmically very similar to Baby You Tell Me. So I put it in the same place. I'm like, wow, that really works, and it means the same thing, more or less. So then I just sat down and wrote an idea about two lovers being separated, one in New York and one in Puerto Rico. So it's about the New York part is, well, my love is skyscrapers and glass and steel, and the one in Puerto Rico, her love is mountains and trees. And but you tell me, so the singer's saying, but at the end of the day, you tell me, what have we got here? So it's kind of the idea.
Well, it sounds good, and we'll play it, and we'll be back with the rest of the interview with Dave, and you're listening to John Talk Radio.
Yo siento alma y futuro y promesas. cuando me besas. Y en tus ojos este mundo existe solo en el momento. Oh, del suave viento. Pero dime tú. Llámame como siempre has querido. Llámame cuando ya no puedas más. Agárrame con todo tu sentido. Seremos tú y yo. Hasta el final. De conocerte, nada era mío en este mundo. Corazón vagabundo. Pero dime tú. Ámame como siempre has querido. Llámame cuando ya no puedas más. Agárrame con todo tu sentido. Cuando ya no puedas más, agárrame con todo tu sentido. Seremos tú y yo hasta el final. Hasta el final. Hasta el final.
You're listening to John Talk Radio. Our special guest tonight is Dave Sasser. That's a really cool song, Dave. That's got a great guitar lick in it. Is that you on the break?
No, actually. The lead guitar on that album, 90% of it at least, is my cousin, David Patterson, who is part of my New York band. He's originally from Savannah, Georgia, and spent a lot of time in Atlanta. And he's played with everybody from the Indigo Girls to, I don't know if you remember, Sean Mullins with the song Lullaby. He's playing on
right.
that.
Yep.
Yeah. And so he's been a pro for a long time. And when I got my band, my latest band together here in New York, I asked him to join us. And so he's playing lead guitar, basically, and some of the rhythm parts. Yep.
Yeah, that's a really cool song. Let's talk about your band in New York. And I want to talk a little bit, Dave, about your band and also about the New York music scene, which is really got to be not an easy thing to break through to, but let's talk about that also. So let's talk about your band, the Mojo Conga Jam.
Mojo Conga Jam.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Mojo Conga Jam consists of Dan Vonnegut on drums, Antar Goodwin on bass, my cousin David Patterson on guitar, and then we have different percussionists sit in and different background vocalists at different times. But those three guys are the core. I guess Dan and Antar came through David, through my cousin. So we sat down and started, you know, working on songs, and he said, "Oh, you know, I know a bass player and drummer that might fit in really well." So I hooked up with them, and both Dan and Antar played with everybody. Sting, you know, you name it, all the top people.
Wow.
Because one thing about living in New York, which is wonderful, is that there's a ton of extremely talented, hardworking, professional musicians who, you know, will play with a big name one day, but, you know, they're looking for work and they like playing. So,
right.
You know, if you're just somebody like me who doesn't have a hit record, they'll actually, if they like the music, they'll actually play with me. So you end up getting some really tight you know, if you have your stuff together and if you have good material, you end up getting some really tight musicians.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so that's the main band. Now, every now and then there are other people I should mention, like Phil Dunn is this amazing bass player who I know who plays with me sometimes too, if Antar can't make it. Because, you know, when you're gigging in New York also, depending on what the show is, not the same lineup can make it every time, so you have some people substitute. And Phil's a killer bass player who steps in for Antar sometimes. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's good. And with the band, and when you guys, I've been to New York. I've been there, you know, just a few times, maybe three or four times, and I know that the music scene is so intense and so amazing. I mean, there's so many different types of music going on all the time, and you can listen. Yeah, and how. Like, we want to also talk a little bit, Dave, about the business side of music, because that's always something that, like, I was talking to somebody today, and they were talking about musicians, and we were talking about, you go hear a band, or you go, like, you stop into a bar or whatever, and you hear a band, and you say, oh, okay, you hear a couple songs and leave. And you don't really realize what all goes into that, you know, for that guy to be there. How hard, it's not easy, you know, and also, you talked about, you know, the band, the guys, you know, David and the rest of the guys in the band, and playing together and having, synergy in a band is also very difficult.
Right. Well, people probably have written books about what it takes to keep a band together. But it's like any other organization. You know, you've got somebody's got to have the vision. They've got to be able to execute. You've got to, you know, at least my take on it is you've also got to make it fun for everybody. Because getting back to when you say, like, my music sounds fun, what I find is when we're performing, if we're having a good time, that's 80% of the deal. You know, if we're enjoying it, even if we're making mistakes, the audience really digs it. And if we're not enjoying it, but we're hitting everything picture perfect, the audience isn't going to get it. So, yeah, keeping a band together is its own dynamic and its own, you know, world full of issues and problems and you know, not always problems. I mean, sometimes a lot of problems. I've been in bands that were really dysfunctional. These guys have been with me now probably 3 or 4 years, and it's one of the smoothest bands I've been with, but also because they're all pros.
Yeah.
And it's not about egos, you know, and they're playing with a lot of other people, and they come in and they do their job, and everybody's really good about it, and that's huge.
Yeah. That's a good point.
But in terms of getting gigs, New York is notoriously brutal. On any given night, there's, 200 bands playing, probably half of which, if they were in most other cities, would be the toast of the town. But here they're just playing from 7 to 7:45 at, you know, Kenny's Castaways on Bleecker.
Yeah.
And the truth is, to break into that world, it's tough. You have to drop off, I guess now you can send an email link to your website, and then you have to repeatedly get in touch to have people pay attention. And then you go and show up, and they'll give you a Wednesday night, and the booking agent's attention, and the booking agent will give you a Wednesday night at midnight. And if you can bring in more than two people off the street, then he gives you a slightly better time. So it takes a long time. At this point, I know a lot of the people in the clubs, and I've hooked up with a booking agent who works with a lot of different clubs. So I can get a reasonable time, and they also know that I can bring in some people. It takes a while to get to that point, and unfortunately, there are a lot of great bands, especially great original bands, because it's always hard to get people to come out to hear original music in New York City when there's so much else competing. So a lot of great original bands that aren't getting heard because they'll play, you know, one night at midnight on Wednesday, bring in three people, and never get invited back. So oftentimes I would think how it'd be different if I had left New York and played in another city. And I've done that, like touring and dropping in on friends and stuff. And it's great, but it's, you know, the big fish in a small pond. I don't know anybody, you know, not very many people who do that necessarily get seen by the right people.
Right.
But, you know, it's funny because I'm slowing down as I'm saying that because I'm realizing I've been doing a lot of thinking about this. The music world's changing now anyway, so you don't really rely on people dropping in. I mean, I'm not expecting somebody to drop in and give me a record deal. It doesn't really happen. I'm worried about getting my songs done. I mean, we have a record deal on a small indie label here in New York, but it's really a matter of me getting out there and doing it all myself, and or with the band and with the fans, etc. And you can do that pretty much anywhere, especially now that we're online. Like, you know, you're interviewing me and you're not in New York. So it's a matter of it's a different world now, and people don't get discovered in clubs, at least from what I can tell anymore. But it's a good way to get your music in front of people, and it's a great way as a songwriter to get a sense of which songs work and which don't.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, when you're at a bar, especially a noisy bar where you're competing with a soccer game on TV and beer and you know, if the song isn't working, then nobody's going to be polite and pay attention to you. They're going to go back to the game. So it's really a baptism by fire. But if you can do it, if you can hold people's attention and really rock a club in the village that has, you know, five bands a night, seven nights a week, then you got a pretty tight band. So
it's
a good place to, you know, test your mettle, that's for sure.
Well, that's a good point, because, I mean, you could probably go to another city that wouldn't be that difficult, but would you get where you wanted to go? Because, you know, it's always good. It can be frustrating at times, but it's always good to challenge yourself. You're up against, you know, the best. They're really good people, so you know you're going to continuously move forward. And you were talking about, you know, in a band, you have to have that goal. Somebody has to be driving towards that goal and, you know, have that desire, which is really cool, because I know that I've talked to bands that were also in Los Angeles where they have, and also a pretty large population
Absolutely.
Of bands playing.
Yep,
yeah.
Yep.
Any given night. Yep. I mean, you know, and you have to really work hard. But I think you hit a really good point about how the music industry has changed. I mean, I've seen it change dramatically. And in the last, 10 years, probably in the last 5 years, but with the internet and with people like YouTube and with people being able to listen to your music no matter where they are, that's got to be pretty cool. I mean, for a musician to know that, you know, you put some stuff out and then you hear back from somebody from, you know, from England or from, you know, wherever. And it's got to feel really good, because if you think back, Dave, like, you know, back in the 80s, where it would be the guy in the club, you know, waiting for that record mogul to walk in and say, hey, I'm going to take you, you know, to the stars. And now it's not like that.
Yeah, and, you know, it's funny. I mean, it's not like that in the sense of somebody walking in a bar, but you mentioned YouTube, and I just was at an interesting function earlier this week with this producer named Kirk Yano, very cool guy, good friend of mine. And he, I don't know if you've heard of this YouTube sensation, but there are these two Croatian guys who are playing a Michael Jackson tune on cellos.
Uh-uh.
If you haven't heard of it, you will, because literally 2 or 3 months ago, this guy was touring through Croatia and dropped in on the local studio just to kind of check out what was going on in whatever town they were in. And made a contact with the studio head, whatever. Then he came back to New York, and the studio guy said, you know what, take a look at this link. And he sent it to him. And it's these two guys playing Smooth Criminal, I think it's called, the Michael Jackson song. And, and it's a dialogue between two cellos. And it's amazing. They produced the video for under $1,000. They got a friend of theirs to tape it in like 3 or 4 different areas around town. They edited it, and they posted it on YouTube. It's got like 5 million hits. So he called them up, brought them to New York. They were on the Ellen show last week.
Wow.
Elton John heard about them. They're going to tour and open for Elton John. And these two guys literally playing cellos in Croatia. You know, it's bizarre. And he got him a deal on Sony. So he's got a 5-record deal as of in literally 2 months, 2.5 months.
Yeah, that is amazing.
Yeah, so the world, you know, you don't have people walking into bars necessarily, but if you pull the right package together at the right time, and, you know, all the stars happen to be aligned, things happen, weird things happen. So.
Oh, yeah, I agree 100%. And I also think that it's like you have to look at what is available out there. And I was also talking to this – I had some pretty cool conversations today, but I talked to this one guy who builds websites, and he was talking that he lived in Cincinnati, Ohio, and there was this guitar player that he knows that everybody in Cincinnati knows that will not – play outside of his home. He refuses to play at a bar. He refuses to play in public. He refuses to let anybody record him. He doesn't want to, I don't know what his past is, Dave, but he doesn't want anything to do with it.
He's on a witness protection for Mr. Bob in New York, probably.
There may be something going on there. I don't know. But, right. But he said that you can go. He knows some buddies that know him. He said you can go to his house. He'll let you come in. He said he's a very cool guy, and he just can tear the guitar up. He said it's just unbelievable what he can do. But they'll say somebody will bring something out to record it, and he won't let him do it. He said, no, this is not going to happen. And so he said, isn't that amazing how that this guy's – I've never heard him, of course, but this guy was right. Talking to me. He said, if you ever heard the guy, you would just – your jaw would drop open. But that's also kind of cool. Like we were talking about the guys in Croatia that were probably not playing around a lot of people. And, you know, just the right folks heard it. And with technology the way it is now, it can go fast. It can really move quickly.
Yeah, well, they were actually studying classical – they're classical cellists. Mm. And they just decided to do this on a whim, totally on a whim. And it blew up. So good for them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'll be checking that out here in a little bit, but that's really cool. But also, you know, one of the things that's very interesting to me when I talk to professional musicians, and we hit on it a little bit, but on the business side of it and how important it is. And I want to ask you, Dave, what advice you would have for young musicians or people starting out in the industry, because it hasn't been that long ago. I interviewed this one lady, her name is Danica Holmes, and she was in college, and she was right before she had her doctorate completed, and she had this direction in her life where her whole family, you know, saw her going in this one direction with, you know, in the world with her doctorate and all this other stuff, and she said, that's not what I want to do. I want to be a musician. She dropped everything, and to be a professional musician. And she said it was pretty painful at first. You know, it was like, it doesn't look that hard. But when she found out, it's pretty hard. So what would your advice be, Dave, to people that are starting out, want to say, hey, you know, I'm going to give it what I have in music. And I'm going to try this thing.
Well, I'll tell you, the first thing I can say is, everybody has a slightly different path. So there is no tried and true path. I used to joke that with a buddy of mine that, you know, if we went to law school and then had a hit record, there'd be all the people going to law school to try to, you know, get a hit record through law school, even though that had nothing to do with having a hit record. You know, everybody, right. You got to kind of get to figure it out yourself. But I will say, you also have to have, I think, unless you're very lucky, you have to have a lot of tools out there because, you know, even if you drop it all to be a musician, you still got to pay rent. And yep. Depending where you live in New York, you know, playing clubs all night, you're not going to get enough money to pay rent in New York City. You know, so there's got to be other things going on. And I don't think that detracts from being a musician by any means. I made a decision a long time ago that I was going to play music the rest of my life in the same way that some people play golf the rest of their life. And in fact, it was Ruben Blades, this amazing Panamanian singer, Juan Blades, who's one of my heroes, who said that. I read that in an interview. He's like, yeah, I'm going to play golf, because he actually, in fact, went to Harvard Law School and ran for president of Panama at one point. But he's also one of the top, he's like the kind of the Bob Dylan of Latin American salsa. And he's always done it as part of his life, and he's got a profession, and in fact, I think he's the current Panamanian head of Panamanian Tourism Board.
Wow.
So, you know, everybody has a different path, and whatever works for you to where you can pay the rent and you can sleep at night and you can still get in as much music as possible, then that works for you. But I would say it's always good to have some sort of skill, because, you know, when the gigs are few and far between, it's good to have something to be able to pay rent that doesn't, you know, detract from music and it's not soul deadening, something that, you know, you can do to pay rent. It's important. So.
Oh yeah, exactly. That's a good point. I mean, you have to survive. It is, you know, one of the things, David, just popped in my head when I was in New York City once that just stood out was the folks in the subway that were playing
mm-hmm.
music. And I can remember one morning, and I was going off to my job, and everybody was just, you know, their heads down, and they're all just in their own worlds, and, you know, we're very fast paced. And I was trying to get to one point, and I can remember hearing this angelic sound, and it was this choir that was singing in the subway. And I thought, man, that was pretty cool. I mean, you don't hear that around where I live, Dave. That's one thing.
Yeah, no, you it's amazing. In New York, you have world-class people, you know, hanging out in New York and playing. It's true. In the subways,
yeah.
It's absolutely true. Yeah, you know, one thing I would add also is if you want advice for young people, if you're in school, stay in school. If you're getting your PhD, you want to drop out before your PhD, that's one thing. But, you know, get a college degree if you can. If that's your you know, if you're able to do that, do that. It's not going to detract from your music. That's the bottom line. If you don't let it, it's not. It might detract when you're studying, but once you have your degree, you'll be glad that you have something to do while you're perfecting your craft. Because, you know, it takes years to get where you're going to get. No matter how talented you are, you're going to get better and better. Now, there are some people that, you know, when they're 18, they land in the right place and they never have to work a day job in their life, which is great. But that's
very
not
few.
The majority of
yeah.
people.
Correct.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. And I think it's also good for people to understand that, you know, when you're playing music, it's like we talked about how it's very rewarding, and people that are musicians, they wouldn't do anything else. I mean, that's what drives their heart and their soul, and it's really awesome. But it's also, like we talked about, like the business part, and like you were talking about, also working with people that can get you gigs, and it's very, you have to be very professional and focused. And I think that, you know, some of the younger musicians that I've talked to were thinking, oh man, it's just going to be really cool. We're going to play and we're going to party and we're going to, and everything's going to be great.
Yeah.
You know,
which it is sometimes. It definitely is. And that's worth doing, but yep. You can't build a career on that. You know, that's the bottom line.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. I can remember being young and thinking, you know, you just play. You don't have to worry about anything else. But that actually doesn't work out too.
Well, it works
good.
Out great for a couple of weeks, and then you got to let do, and you got to figure out what to do.
Exactly. Right, people knocking on your door and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. So let's go back to when you were growing up in Puerto Rico. And did you grow up, Dave, in a musical family? I mean, was there music around all the time? And
well, in Puerto Rico, there is music around. Like, you'll go to a party, and there'll be a live band, and it's not necessarily, in fact, usually it's not like a professional band that somebody hired. It's usually your buddy's cousin who plays conga, and these people play, you know, so it's very much part of the fabric of the social culture, and there's much less of a hard line between a musician and a non-musician. Like, anybody can sit down and start playing the conga, or, you know, bang along, or grab a, you know, cowbell, or whatever you want to do, and, you know, just jump in. Of course, some people are really good, but there's no distinction between a musician and a non-musician. In my family, however, my mom would sing in church. My parents liked music. They appreciated music. I can't say they were real rock and roll fans. My dad loved blues and likes the Rolling Stones. My mom was more classically oriented. But my older brother and I both, I'm the youngest of four kids. He's the oldest of four. And the two of us both kind of fell into it. So he, being 4 years older than me, he would buy albums when I was a little kid, and so I ended up being surrounded by his albums. And then when he went to college, he left them all at home, so I got to spend the next 4 years immersed in all of his albums, plus buying my own. And then when he'd come back from the States, I remember he brought the single of Roxanne, the Police's song, when it was still a, you know, 45 single, and it was
right.
The new cool thing that had just come out. And I was like, oh my God, it blew me away. I was a little kid, you know, I was like, oh my God. So it was a very musical household in that sense. There was always music playing. My brother plays bass, so he picked up the bass and started playing. I picked up the guitar and started playing. But nobody else in our family really played any instruments. but we always had it around. It was always a very musical home in that sense. There was always something, some music playing.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's what I find a common a bond with a lot of people. It's like, you know, that was that connection they had with their friends and their family, and they heard good music, and it's just a really cool thing. But, you know, also I think it's really important. I don't, what I've also done some shows on and talked to people about how important I think it is for kids to learn music and music theory and just music in general in schools, you know, and in middle schools and high schools. And Well, what's your take on that? I mean, a lot of times what's happening around here, I live in central Ohio, and when they do budget cuts, Dave, one of the first things they'll do is cut out music, which I think is terrible.
I know. Well, I'll tell you, my elementary school had a band, so I played clarinet. And in sixth grade, I was first clarinet in the JV band, whatever you want to call it. And I loved it. You know, we had music class every day. Then I switched to a junior high that didn't have any music, and high school didn't have any. And I really missed it. At the time, I didn't realize how much I missed it. But that's what, after a few years of not having it in school, it led me back to picking up a guitar and doing it on my own and getting into rock and roll.
Right.
But I'm not even sure you can quantify it. It's one of those somewhat unidentifiable things. But I think music, I mean, you could probably do tests and show that, you know, if you study music, you do better in math. I don't know. But all I know is...
Oh, I've seen that.
I've heard that too. Yeah. And it wouldn't surprise me if that's true. But above and beyond that, it feeds your soul in a way that nothing else does. And for me, that is a huge part of life and growing up. And when you're a kid and you're figuring things out, why not make music part of what you're figuring out? You know, it helps you figure other stuff out, and it just makes you feel good. And you know, there's no reason not to have it and every reason to have it, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, exactly. So. I think it does two things. It brings out a creative part of kids. You know, because I think that's very important for human beings to be able to create things, and then they build confidence on that.
Yep.
And
yep.
Yeah, right. And I think it's so cool, you know, to see that. And then, you know, I also know some musicians that take time to go into schools, talk to folks about it, and play music to kids that, you know, maybe wouldn't hear the certain types of music. And I just think it's really, really awesome. So I always like to bring that up. Yeah.
Well, you know, let me actually point something out. I was just talking to a friend of mine whose son is in a very interesting private school where every morning they break for 45 minutes and they're all encouraged to do something creative. So all the music guys get together and they jam for 45 minutes every morning. Then at lunchtime they have a break to jam, and then after school they jam. So there's three times a day where they're jamming, and it's just such an amazing way to spend the day. You know, I mean, they're still doing their classes in between. But I wish I'd had that. That's all I can say.
Yeah, that's really cool. And you can think back, you know, when my growing up, you know, people that were influential to me that I, like my mom played the piano, my grandma played the piano, and I would listen to them, and I would just be amazed by what they were doing. I'm like, man, it's so cool. I couldn't do it, but I was really glad they could do
it. You could if you tried long enough and practiced hard enough.
Well, probably.
But that's another story.
Yeah, I started playing guitar and other things, but I just think, you know, it's you make a great point, you know, with that with kids, how that I think it's really important for that. But Dave, we're running out of time, but it's been really great talking to you tonight.
Yeah, well, likewise. Wow, the whole time's done. I hadn't realized that.
Yeah, it goes pretty fast, but you know, just I hope the best for you and your career, and we'll keep in touch. And and anything you'd like to say to your fans or anything before
we
close out?
Yes, I would like to make one quick plug. I'm on the board of an organization called the Visionary Media Organization, and we promote opportunities for blind musicians.
Oh.
So if anybody's out there and has a minute, go to visionarymedia.org, and you can hear all about us. We're based in New York, but we have functions all around the city and the country. So take a minute, go look at it, and it's a not-for-profit, official not-for-profit, and any and all support would be greatly, greatly valuable to us.
Well, that sounds great. That sounds good. I'll check that out.
All right. Thank you so much, John.
Well, thank you, Dave. Take care, and we appreciate everybody listening tonight to John Tech Radio. And tune in next Saturday. We'll have George Bunnell from the 60s Los Angeles band Strawberry Alarm Clock will be on, so that'll be cool. But take care, Dave. We'll talk to you later, and everybody have a good evening.
All right, John. Thanks.
balas son de veras. Todos reconocen que los dados están cargados. Todo el mundo sabe que el disparo dio en el blanco. Y todo el mundo tira con los dedos bien cruzados. Y todos se conocen, pero nadie dice nada, pero todos reconocen, todos reconocen, todos reconocen que la batalla está perdida, todos reconocen que los rastros se han llevado. Todo el mundo sabe que el amor está en quiebra y la sangre seca se ha quedado. Y todo el mundo sabe. Y todos se conocen. Nadie dice nada, pero todo reconoce, todo reconoce. Nadie dice nada, pero todos reconocen.